Welcome to Pacific Novel Project, starring Jason Peterson as Jason Keith and Steve Childress as Steve Childress.
That's me.
The podcast where we edit, review our work, perform workshops, and show how it's done.
And try not to cry.
Try not to cry. I cry every night. Cry myself to sleep every night, Steve.
Same here. Same here. I mean, I thought I sometimes think I have thick skin, but, you know, sometimes it hurts.
Me, yeah, I just got Newton biting me.
Oh, yeah. Newton does like to do that.
He's sitting in my lap right now, so I might just suddenly interrupt you with a random scream at some point.
Yeah, there's probably a bite coming.
Yep, because he's being nice right now.
It's a trap!
It's a trap. Man, let's get to it then, shall we?
Yeah, yeah, sounds good. I guess we're going to start with The Ghost of Silver Creek.
Yep, that would be by me.
Indeed, by Jason Peterson or Keith.
Jason Keith, that's my writing name.
Okay, Jason Keith.
If I ever make it big in music, that'll be my music name too.
Nice, I like it.
Guess somebody told me it sounded like sounds like a rock star's name or something.
Well, okay, yeah.
I was like, yeah, I guess so, maybe. Peterson's just long.
Right, that's fair, that's fair. All right, so last we left off, Avis and Elsa went for a ride on Kila, and Avis got to see some of the countryside, and she got to see Silver Creek. Elsa got to see her home from up on the cliffside, looking down on it. Avis also learned the direction of the man's ranch, and this occurred before they ended up in the clearing where Avis woke up naked and afraid. So now we're back in the clearing. Avis jumps down behind the girl, and when Avis didn't answer her, Elsa turns around. The woman's head swivels about a frantic, almost hysterical urgency in her eyes. Avis, Elsa asked, "What's wrong?" I made a couple edits.
Yeah, you lined out whole lines.
Let me back up here. I have to start with what I liked first. I was gonna be all chronological about it, but then I was like, oh, I shouldn't do that.
Oh yeah, good news, bad news.
I know, right? Got to do that.
What was I doing here? I just wrote the same thing two times in a row, practically.
You did, but that's okay. So I liked this sentiment on page 68, about halfway down. It's when they're in the field and Elsa's whispering. Elsa whispered as if she feared awakening something ancient and terrible that dwelled in the mountains long before man walked the earth. I liked that sentiment. It had like an allusion toward an ancient something. And I thought it was interesting in light of her being an ancient species who they themselves disappeared from this plane of existence a long time ago. So she was almost like whispering in fear of herself. I don't know. I liked it.
Oh, well, Elsa was the one whispering.
I know. Oh, yeah, that's right. Anyway, my bad. Totally read that wrong.
Is it less cool?
No, it's still cool. Okay. Still cool.
Good.
Still cool. Still like it. Because she's still with the thing that, you know, should be feared, that is present. But yeah, at the beginning here, I axed the last lines from last week's submission because there was a repetition of them over. I mean, I think there was a little bit of difference, but not much. So moving on.
I got a question.
What's up?
How do you spell uncertainly? I don't understand why this is telling me that uncertainly is spelled wrong. It wants me to change it to uncertainty, which would make no sense.
It wouldn't make any sense. And you spelled uncertainly right. It suggested uncertainty for me as well. And I was like, no, it's spelled right.
Okay.
Let's see a little bit further down. Blood had dried black, but she saw something else. No scraps of clothes, not flesh, no footprints, no dagger, nothing. No signs of coming or going other than those she had made the night she woke in that place. Is it supposed to be not flesh, or was it supposed to be no flesh?
No scraps of clothes. Probably should be comma, no flesh.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering.
Or period, no flesh. One of the two.
Yeah, you could go either way. I mean, the sentence structure already supports a period if you wanted to do a period there. Next paragraph down. How did I get here is in italics. And then I was wondering if who or why should be in italics, because I kind of feel that that's her still wondering, but maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I was kind of back and forth on that, but I figured I'd bring it up anyway.
Do you think I need the italics at all? Is that like an old-fashioned way of having people thinking to themselves? And
for me, it adds readability because it makes me slow down. And I kind of get a similar sense along with the character that I'm slowing down in that moment. I think it's a matter of taste. I mean, some people think it's old hat. I tend to like the italics within her thoughts, such as they are used in this part here.
Okay. I might have to revisit that if I have a lot of people think to themselves when they're around Chalk.
Oh, true. True. Because Chalk has done an italics for his dialogue. That's true. So yeah, I might have to revisit that.
All right.
Let's see. Bottom of page 68. The girl reached toward the Palomino's tail and he took two quick steps away from her, returned to his leisurely walk. Elsa reached out again and again. Keila stepped away from her. He snorted in amusement and the girl laughed and lunged toward him. Keila barely sidestepped her grasp and soon the pair were running in circles around each other. I like this playful moment in this scene during Avis's ruminations on the spot in the clearing. Cause she's kind of, I mean, for me and kind of how I read it is she's kind of reliving this trauma and the dagger's gone. So she knows somebody has been there and her memory's gone. So she couldn't even guess as to who. So, I mean, for her, this kind of feels like a weighty moment. And there's some levity going on around her. So I liked that. Let's see a little further down. Page 69, same page. The woman sat next to the girl and Keila moved off to nip at the butterflies that scattered in his playful wake. I loved the imagery there with the butterflies scattering and the horse just kind of being playful. And yeah, I liked the imagery. It was cool.
You are an ominous narwhal.
Woohoo! I'm a narwhal, anonymously.
Yeah.
I like it. That could be a punk band name, I think. Anonymous yeah. Narwhal. Yeah.
Not as cute as a quokka, but...
True, true. But hey, what can you do? Not much as cute as a quokka.
Yeah, but I mean, unicorn whale? I'd say that's competitive.
Ah, fair enough. No, it'd be great. It'd be really great if it was a llama, or what's the other one? What's the other one that's like a llama but small?
Alpaca.
Alpaca, yeah.
Yeah, Autumn's into alpacas.
Ah, nice.
I mean, she likes llamas too, but alpacas she appreciates.
Right. I think alpacas are a little bit more playful, I think. But I could be wrong. I don't know. I don't know enough about them. I just see that people usually have like playful alpacas in videos. I don't know. Let's see a little further down. I like this word combination, azure clarity. I just like how those two words work together.
I have a lot of little grammar things going on this.
Just a few little letter things and a few little words. I told you before, I mean, little tiny edits. I usually skip over for the sake of, you know, not being nitpicky, or at least not boring the audience with my nitpickiness.
Oh, yeah, you don't need to talk about them. I just noticed.
So there was another word choice I liked down toward the bottom of the page.
Beatific.
That's not a word I come across often.
No, I see it once in a while. I think that's the first time I've ever used it.
Nice. Well, it's a good word choice. Avis smiled a bittersweet but genuine smile for the girl who was about to transition into a woman if she hadn't already. It was that moment Avis pushed back the anger that threatened to overwhelm her. She would stay here, not because she had nowhere to go, but because it felt right. And this went back to that beatific word, because Elsa's like having this profound cathartic moment in nature where she's kind of let go of everything that has been weighing on her, especially, you know, back home. And, you know, I was having a constant reminder of the burned down house and the threat from the Brodies and kind of the whole range war thing going on. And also, you know, just all the loss she's experienced. So, I mean, it was kind of like Avis is having all these like mixed feelings and for herself in this location and in this moment, but she kind of pushes them all aside to let Elsa have like this moment of catharsis. I thought that was cool.
Speaking of good words.
Ah, thank you. But I'm really liking the relationship that's developing between the two of them. Avis is genuinely cares about Elsa, and you can see it. And she also cares and like sees how the hardships have affected Elsa. And for those of you playing at home, cathartic or catharsis is providing psychological relief through the open expression of strong emotions causing catharsis.
Oh, thanks.
You are welcome.
I just wrote that statement down for me to look it up, not you. In case you think I was telling you to do it.
Oh, I thought you were just subtly communicating with me.
No, that was a note for myself.
Well, anyway.
I mean, I kind of had an idea of what it meant, but it's one of those words where I just kind of figured it out from reading stuff and in context, but, you know, never looked up exactly what it meant. Sometimes, you know, there's subtle differences between words.
Oh, too true. Too true. I've fallen into those pitfalls myself between subtle differences between words, and cathartic was one I had to learn really well. So, yeah. my nephew, I think it was like in junior high, just before high school. He went like 6 months saying livid, thinking that it was like, I'm happy, or this is awesome. And I was like, I heard him say it to me one time and I was like, I don't think that means what you think it means.
Oh man. YOLO. You only live it once.
Right. Let's see here. Page 70 still, a little bit further down. I liked the use of auditory senses. Birds tittered above and Keela's hooves touched the trail like a gentle heartbeat. The tittering and the heartbeat. I like that sense of sound. Because they're both sounds that you're like, oh, okay, I know what those are. They can play in the head easy, which was cool. Okay, down to 71. I just had a few small edits to start off with, and then I made a suggestion to cut down on a little bit of repetition with wood.
Can never have too much wood.
Oh, there can be too much wood. let's see here. Avis considered protesting the knotted. The wood he had cut lay scattered about, and Avis began to pick it up and stack it with the rest. She felt his eyes on her for a few moments, then he returned to his work with the axe. I thought this was kind of a loaded sentence here, but it has to do with, let's see here, Avis and Charles finished stacking the wood, and Avis was left with the impression Charles was steadfastly trying to avoid looking at her. Her earlier excitement turned to confusion, and she wondered if it was because he was still upset with her. His glance had been brief, but she saw something in it, something beyond mere desire. And I was like, a mama for Elsa? And someone to push back the loneliness? I don't know. What would go beyond desire? You know?
Love? Or just caring? Interest?
That's true. Interest, love.
But she's sitting there stacking wood in her sexy dress, her sexy frontier dress.
Right.
With no undergarments.
Oh, the lustful machinations that are going on in this book. Oh, they must be smited.
Yeah, this book's getting banned from school libraries for sure.
Damn straight it is. Okay, let's see, a little further down. Section 15, still same page, had a few small little edits. We meet Fido here, and I'm always a fan of Fido. One of the suggestions I had was just with his stripes, his red stripes.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about actual stripes, not the beer.
Yes, yes. The goblin was short with angled red stripes painted across the ribs of his scrawny chest. I just felt that order kind of worked a little better, I thought. But, you know. And then I had another edit that had to do with the bag. Where the 4 feet tall had come in, the sentence felt kind of clunky. I tried kind of playing with it, and it was the bag stood 4.5 feet tall and was nearly as large as the hunched goblin.
Just make a note for myself there. Don't mind my typing.
No worries. All good. Like most of his kind, he wore no shoes on his wide, flat feet. The thick hair on the knuckles of his toes matched the gray of the hair sprouting from his crooked, elongated ears, which were pierced with rings and barbed feathered studs. I really like the description of Fido. It inspires a good image of a goblin for me. And it also made me think of The Princess and the Goblin, the book we read for book club a couple months back, mostly with the feet. And the big white flat feet. And I was like, oh, and hopefully nobody stomps on his feet.
He's got disgusting toes.
Right? Or what if Joshua started rhyming?
Vito, you're no fun. I'm going to kill you with my gun.
Nah, stop it. Yeah. I liked this sentiment from Fido because it inspires questions to be asked by the reader, while it also offers just a tidbit of info on the mechanical hand of Joshua's, which was when Fido says, you already missing hand, you give me other. And it was, you know, as far as for like in exchange for a favor. So it kind of made me go, okay, as a reader, I'm wondering, so Joshua has a mechanical hand and you give me the other, well, Fido got that hand for a favor. What was that favor?
Mm.
So I don't know. I like how it got, you know, got me asking questions when I was reading that. Okay.
He was just kind of being funny.
Ah, fair enough. Fair enough. But still, he has a Joshua hand. Okay. Down to 73. I liked this dialogue from Chalk between Joshua and Chalk here. I commented it on it on the last draft, and I thought it was still funny. And I still found the description of Fido's wood shack sagging like an empty balloon. I still liked that whole description of a shack, and I liked the inventory and the inventory of inside the shack as well. And I still liked the tale of the giant spider that Joshua stepped on, and Fido flipped out because it was like a rare spider that spun webs that he needed. I didn't have a lot to say in these Fido sections because I felt the sections were working really well. I didn't really find anything that stood out to me. Maybe as I read deeper into it, I might find something. But
okay.
But I did like this juxtaposition on page 74, like halfway down. And it was the juxtaposition of his meticulously made bed, but his work table being total chaos. Some would say a messy work area is the sign of a genius. Or some would say you just hired Dennis Nedry. You take either or.
I don't know who Dennis Nedry is.
Jurassic Park. You didn't say the magic word.
Oh. Okay.
Because, what was his name? The guy, Dr. Hammond, was always like, your workstation's always so dirty, you're a slob. It was funnier in my head.
Tired of this hacker bullshit.
Samuel L. Jackson, man. I want a snakes on the plane line about raptors.
Sick and tired of these motherfucking raptors. Man, that was a funny movie. Talk about snakes on the plane.
I know, right? We should probably just do that one just for like a special.
Oh, man. Snakes on the plane.
Snakes on a plane. All right, let's see. A little bit further down, 74. I like how Fido's kind of playing dumb with Joshua. But one thing that really got me was, this is when Joshua's asking him about the ear. Is Fido's all orc? Goblin? No, not goblin. Fido clucked to himself. Too thin, can't tell, too gray, like cut from dead thing. Oh, you get from undead? This really makes me... I have some questions. What does Fido know of undead elves?
Nothing really. I mean, he was just like, it was gray, so he's like undead. Like the next line, he's like, ooh, he paused in his work for a moment. His eyes were lit with excitement. You know, like the idea of like, ooh, undead. That would be neat. Wouldn't that be something?
Right, right. But it almost made me like kind of go, wouldn't you just think dead?
<You know? laughs> Oh, because he was hopeful. Yeah. Well, why would you take an ear from a dead thing?
Oh, well, he is a shaman. I mean, you know, okay. All right. Okay. It was just a wishful thinking moment.
Yeah.
A little macabre, you know, necromancers and.
I mean, he kind of gets his powers from life, but hey, it's kind of fun to see new things.
Hey, even life is obsessed with death. So, you know, it works.
It's all part of the circle. Thanks, Elton John.
Indeed. And Mufasa.
And Mufasa. No, excuse me, Sir Elton John.
Oh, yeah, that too. Let's see. Still on page 75. I liked Joshua asked about him knowing of any ghosts or spirits around Silver Creek. And I still love this line from Fido. And it's kind of a scathing truth. Is spirits everywhere, Joshua? Fido replied quietly as he sniffed the concoction in his bowl. You people make sure of this. Yeah, totally love that line still. Fido's still playing dumb, even like further into this conversation. I just have this feeling Fido's holding back. And I like that he is. And it's like, for me, it's like, I know he knows what the ear is and the circle. Because even when he gets showed the circle, he kind of gives it a double take. And Joshua's like, well, what was that about? And he's like, blah, 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 whatever, don't know. And he's just like playing this really close to the chest. But like, for me, I kind of feel like this shit's in his wheelhouse. And I think deep down, Joshua knows it too. Like Joshua, I think, has already connected the dots, but he wants to hear somebody say it. It's kind of where I'm at with this moment.
That's reasonable.
All right, cool. Woohoo! I'm reasonable. Okay, let's see here. 76. And then Fido gives up a little bit about, I think it's a summoning glyph, maybe teleport, not goblin, maybe, and then he stops, and then he shrugs and like says elf. And as they kind of get into a conversation about like, you know, impossibility, possibility, and unlikelihood. And then Joshua thinks about the Palomino that he saw running around at Joshua's homestead. And I liked this line as well. Joshua scratched at his chin. He saw the Palomino race across the field, a golden herald of reckoning the world is overdue for. So it was almost like for me, the Palomino was like a symbol of like the end of time, the end of days kind of thing.
Ragnarok.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Something along those lines. So yeah, it kind of had a damnation about it that I liked. Then he asks Fido about the dagger, and Fido plays it off as like a tool for an orcish ceremony. And then Joshua's like, the craftsmanship's too fine for being orcish. To Joshua, Fido seemed frozen in place, the goblin's large black orbs hypnotized by the page. Then, slowly, the shaman reached out with a skeletal finger and the blade hilt, and the skeletal finger and the blade from hilt to curled tip.
Oh, he traced it. It should be like he's tracing it. Yeah, I'm skipping a word there.
Yeah, okay. I was wondering, because I definitely tripped up on that. The loose skin of his arm tightened with goose flesh. I liked that. And then, yeah, he asked him if he has it, and he's like, no, it's a drawing. I did like this line from Joshua when Fido's being all elusive about the dagger. What is it, Joshua said? I swear on all your gods, if you say a dagger, I will drag you to the cliff and see if you can fly. I do love the dialogue between these two characters. Feels natural. I like the tension, but it's like a friendly tension. And then Fido, this is where he admits it's part of a ceremony. And Joshua asks, what kind of ceremony? Doesn't look very practical. What's it used for? And this is where I get an idea of like where Joshua already has like the answers. He just wants to hear it. He just wants to hear it out, said out loud. Fido gazed at Joshua and set his frail green hand on Joshua's steel hand. Take things. I like that. I like that line. Take things, because, well, that's kind of that's pretty much what happened. I like that Fido's not making this easy for Joshua. And I think Fido, in kind of some way, wants like Joshua to like, you know, connect the dots himself. And I think it's a good move to do between these two, because I think it adds a tension, like an unspoken tension between them. But not an adversarial tension, but more of a friendly tension that exists. And maybe because of the spider. Who knows? But yeah, that's what I got, man.
Cool. Thanks.
You are welcome.
All right. Are you ready?
Yep, ready.
On to Hollywood Dreams, where Monty and Tomb are shaking down suspects, going on stakeouts, the kind you sit around and watch people, not the kind where you eat stuff. They go to the Deutsch's house?
Deutsch house.
Oh, just Deutsch?
Deutsch. I think it's just Deutsch house.
All right. So they're coming to the Deutsch house. This is where you rewrote this a little bit. This originally is a scene where they come and they're watching for Lloyd.
Yes. Yes, I did do a little rewrite. I was like, I struck some stuff that I was just like, I smite you.
You're just going to do it now instead of later.
Yeah, I thought I might as well, because I knew it was going to be, I knew I was going to get rid of it.
Yeah. All right. So they come up. Lloyd is the manager for the place where they found the dead girl's sister was living and her joint was tossed. So now they're staking him out. Got the binoculars hanging out down the street. German car pulls up. Pretty much has my same comment from last time, which isn't really relevant anymore. Lloyd comes out. They go inside the building. Monty asks Tomb what the significance of the place was. Tomb says, does the name Hermann Schwinn ring a bell? And he's talking about the these protesters and how there was this riot because Nazis were protesting and people were protesting Nazis, and he's gotta do his duty, and they ended up protecting the Nazis and saving the Nazis from this protester and stuff. And these are like most of your Nazi shit in here, I'm assuming these are real dudes and real shit that happened.
Yes, actually, I found a great article I'll send you that I wrote this whole scene around, looking as like Tomb's like telling it, like, you know, a couple years later.
Okay, cool. Oh, well, not cool, but cool.
right. It's a historical cool.
Yeah, and that's page 71. I forgot to say that. Yeah, just the bottom of page 71, he just lit a cigarette and like a second later was throwing it back out of the window. I guess. I don't know how cheap cigarettes were then. Aren't cigarettes actually not that expensive? Mostly it just comes from taxes, most of this expense?
Pretty much from what I understand.
Tax the fuck out of that shit. Quit smoking. How you doing with that, by the way? Sidebar. Sidebar, Steve's smoking problems.
I've relapsed. I'm not giving up on the idea. I relapsed.
You're just taking a break. Well, when you say relapse, you mean you had a couple, or are you just going like a pack a day?
Like, I'd say not even a pack a day.
All right, page 72. I'm just more of talking about the cops and how they had to save them. I think maybe I was wondering about the protest was at the Deutsch House, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was when Hermann Schwinn came to do a big long speech about, and I think it was on George Washington's birthday, if I have the right one in mind. That was either this one or it was one that happened at Madison Square Garden. But they were like talking about how George Washington was the first fascist and how wonderful he was. And he talked about like the idea of Der Tag, which I think translates to the day. And he was referring to the day when in America they could pretty much like take anybody not Aryan and string them up by the light poles and the trees and just leave them there.
All right. Well, I wouldn't worry about the comment then. That was just me forgetting where I was.
Ah, no worries.
I don't think there's anything confusing about the writing here. I think I just got lost.
All right, cool. Thanks.
So that story comes down. He tells that story, and at the bottom of 72, he tells Monty that Monty's first up on the watch, hands him his binoculars, gives him the binoculars and says, "You're it," and takes a nap. And I just wrote, "That's right, noob. New guy gets the watch."
Damn straight. Shit rolls downhill.
So page 73, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. He wakes Toom up and he wants some coffee, and Toom's like, "Yay, there's some coffee right in there." So I guess I'm having a little bit hard time picturing this building, because isn't this the building where Nancy was staying?
No, this is a completely different location.
Yeah, because she was staying at the Sierra Bonita.
Mm-hmm. And this is 15th Street.
Did I read this wrong? How'd they know Lloyd was there? I thought they were at the apartment staking out Lloyd when I originally read this.
Oh, no. No, they... this is after they arrested Lloyd and took him in for questioning.
Oh, okay.
And then they intentionally let him go with the intent to follow him, and then they follow him here.
Yes. But they picked him up. When they arrested him, they picked him up at Sierra Bonita.
Yes, yes.
And then they followed him with the guys from there to here.
Yep.
All right, so they get tired of waiting, and they're like gonna... Is there pictures of this building in that article?
Yes, there is. Yeah, it's like a two-story white building. It almost kind of has like a plantation house kind of look to it, but not as nice. I don't know, almost colonial.
I want a little building description. I don't have any idea what this building looks like. So 73, they decide they're gonna go inside, or they're gonna sneak around in the dark. And Monty's always gung-ho, jumps out of the car like a kid at the end of a 4-hour road trip. I just picture going, "Wah!" Yeah, but I didn't have anything to say on 73, really. 74, top page 74, they're checking out windows and stuff, and they round the corner, and they see tire tracks that are fresh leaving. And... Looks like we're a couple of rubes, I say, pointing out the tire tracks. "Fuck," Monty growls and turns back toward the car. "Let's get out of here." Yeah, I say with a frustrated sigh. They take him in the front door and lead him out the back, and now they've just lost their lead. That's a bummer, but I like it.
Ah, cool. Thanks.
Maybe describe that area a little bit, like, because I'm picturing it like an alleyway or something, which would be concrete. And I'm kind of like, how does that leave the tracks? Or is there grass or something?
I couldn't get a real good look at the place itself. to kind of get an idea, but I guess I could just use some creative license. I mean, I imagine there was probably some grass, and I think there was probably like a wall of some sort around it, I think.
Maybe some tracks through water or leaky oil or something, you know, from a car?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I like that. That turns up the pressure on the guys a little bit. Trying to find this girl, can't find her, and they lose their only clue.
Indeed.
And they go back to Toom's bungalow, and they just talk about the case a little bit. They're having a drink. I think Lloyd killed our girl. I shake my head. No. But he knows more than he's giving up. I just had a line out. I didn't think you need the rest of this half of the sentence. Because you already have him kind of like chuckling, so I didn't know if you needed the grin and stuff too. And they're talking about the guys they found in the freezer and wondering how it's all related. There's a lot of, man, there's bodies on the beach, there's bodies in freezers, a lot of stuff going on. like that they're talking about the antiquities guy, the art guy, just the guy who knows things about that world, Richter. They're going to go see him tomorrow. And so he's just letting him know how he kind of knows him. And Monty thinks it's kind of funny that Elijah was a dirty cop because he was rubbing rum. And Tim tries to explain that he was actually doing civil disobedience. And Monty kind of seems to agree with him a little bit.
A little bit.
So I thought that was a pretty interesting scene. Just, I think this is the first time Monty's been to his house.
Yes.
At least inside his house. So that's kind of a moment for them, because, you know, they started out with Toom starting to lighten up about Monty and not quite being the grumpy guy he was. Although I think I'd like to not see that grumpiness go away completely, because he's still a grizzled war vet, police vet, and, you know, still got to put up with Monty's millennial shit.
Right.
Turn of the century millennial shit. He's the last generation of millennials.
He was the millennial for that time.
Actually, he was probably a little bit a touch beyond that, but it's still funny. That
was fair enough. Yes, it was.
Just page 76, just a small edit version. Streamline that sentence a little bit. My tongue swipes my lips as the savory cask-tinted taste lingers. I wasn't kind of feeling that description. It wasn't, especially since it's followed by, you know, the hints of the coal and the oak and stuff like that. So that just seemed like a little overkill. Yeah, and I think the second part, I kind of have an idea what that's like more than the first part.
Okay.
Although I don't know what an ester is. What's an ester?
An ester is... I'm trying to remember what it is off the top of my head, and I'm not getting there.
Oh, my goodness. I'll wait.
It is an organic compound made by replacing the hydrogen of an acid by an alkyl or other organic group. Many naturally occurring fats and essential oils are esters of fatty acids.
That sounds essential for booze making.
It totally does.
Halfway down the page. Again, 76. Toom gets an anonymous call saying that the killer of Nancy Kaminsky is at the Roosevelt Room 229. Toom's like, who's this? Dude hangs up. That's odd. Oh, he called him at Lou's. He's at Lou's. So he calls Monty on page 77. Get your
ass to Roosevelt Hotel.
Yes. See you at the party, Richter.
Remember when I said I'd kill you last, Richter?
I lied.
Where's Richter? I let him go.
Yup. And he did.
That's great. And if you don't know what the hell we're talking about, then you got some living to do still.
Indeed.
Get to the Roosevelt Hotel. They get the manager and the security guy to open up the door. And of course they find Lloyd dead.
Dun, dun, dun.
Page 78. They're just checking out the room. Made a couple edit suggestions, streamline the sentences, and they call in Edmunds and the
forensics.
Thank you. The forensics team. The room's registered to an Eric Schmidt, although Leloyd is there. And you know what? I didn't even think about this the first time I read it, but now I'm thinking, is there significance to the name Eric Schmidt?
I pretty much just use it as an alias, but I think it was a name that was associated to some of the documents regarding some of the ownership or monies that were transferred through Murphy Ranch.
Okay. So Leloyd has a dagger in his chest, or a hunting knife. Oof. And then they have a discussion on 79 and 80. They're having a discussion that they feel this is a setup. They're like, hey, bet you dollars to donuts that the forensics on this gun that we found in this room is going to be the same as the one that killed Nancy. On page 81, a few edits, but nothing major. They're asking Edmunds if those bodies that they found in the freezer thawed out, and he said soon. Page 82, I like the section. So Leloyd is tied up in the chair. He's tied up too. All right. All the elders of the city that are next to this unto the slain man shall wash their hands over the heifer that is beheaded in the valley. I read aloud from the text. What's that supposed to mean? The Bible, Edmunds answers, Deuteronomy, I think. So they believe this is a firm message to them that, hey, here's our sacrifice for the murder. Now get out of our business or some bad crap's going to happen to you. So I like the way this whole thing went.
Cool. I'm glad.
How they lost Lloyd, and then they found Lloyd, and Lloyd's dead. He's been set up, obviously, and now they have this cryptic warning. Somebody's warning them, but in a roundabout way, so that there's no questions asked. I think that's really cool. I think it turns up the pressure on them. I do have one question, though.
What's up?
Because they murdered Lloyd with a big hunting knife, now, theoretically, they need to find out who killed Lloyd, even if they believe Lloyd was the killer of Nancy. So how come they didn't make it look like he just shot himself or something?
Well, I kind of felt they wanted to send a message too. But yeah, you do have a point there that they would have to figure out who killed Lloyd. So yeah, maybe I might have to play with that a bit and see how I want to do it. Maybe in a way that is a little different. I don't know. Because I was trying to think, it's like, well, if they're going to send a message, do they want to go for some shock and awe? But yeah, you have a point there though.
Yeah, a big giant hunting knife sticking out of somebody's chest is definitely a little shocking. I'm picturing like a Bowie knife type of thing, you know?
Right. Oh,
that's not a knife. This is a knife.
Crocodile Dundee did it.
And then if you go the suicide route, then that changes your challenge. Your challenge is, how are they going to stay on the case if, I don't know, maybe the captain doesn't like it either, maybe. But somebody's going to want them to close that case. So then if you go away from the suicide route, or if you go the suicide route, then, you know, you escape that one challenge of trying to be like, oh, hey, that's kind of going to have to investigate this murder now. So that didn't seem well thought out. Of course, lots of people have unthought out plans to, right. Oh, how do I stay on the case? But then that can be pressure too. Oh, hey, you guys, you need to close this case. What are you guys doing? But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was just my thought on the second reading was, wouldn't it have been better to make it look like he killed himself?
Right? I see where you're going with that.
And then Deuteronomy is a suicide note.
Right? Yeah. I mean, it could still work. I think I'm going to finish playing this draft out with this angle and see where I take it. And if it doesn't work, then I'll try the other way.
Okay. Anyway, good stuff. So then you go to the Richter Gallery on the bottom of page 82. He's like, hey, it's only 8:30. He's like, is he here this late? This is only 8:30. Talks about how Anton's a workaholic. I open the door for Monty and follow him inside. The lobby is large. The walls covered in flat gray paint. Oh, man, that sounds boring. Several framed black and white photos draw attention to the reception desk. So just my question is, would the just because Anton is there working late, would the gallery really still be open that late?
I was kind of back and forth on that. I wasn't sure.
And if it is, are there other people there looking at art?
It's a good question. I'm going to have to think. These are things for me to ponder.
Yeah, you ponder those.
I will.
That's why I'm here. Make you ponder. Ponder your sins.
Woo! I'm going to be doing that for a while.
Did I not say, yeah, I didn't say much on page 83 other than ask that question about would anybody else be working there just because he is? Which means if it was closed, it wouldn't be that easy to get into.
True. Which maybe it should be the next day.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I'll let you worry about that.
Fair enough.
So the waitress asks for their appointment. He's like, hey, I'm an old friend. And then he comes out and he's like, oh, hey, Elijah, what's up? They just have a brief moment. Haven't seen you in a while. Hit page 84. He asks how working with Tomb is. And Monty's like, yeah, it's acquired taste. So that was funny. The rest of the page, they're just asking him about this watch. Hey, we got this watch. We're working on this case. And he asks us if he can have it because he's going to show it around to some people he knows. And they give him pictures instead, which makes sense. Page 85. That's just what happens. And they take off and he invites him and Anna to some kind of event that he's having in a couple days. So I thought that was pretty good. It was kind of a short scene there at the gallery, but I like the interactions between them. I thought that came off good.
Okay, cool.
And man, I guess that's it. We'll see what happens next time.
Same PNP time, same PNP channel.
Tune in next week for the further adventures of Elijah Tomb and the mystery of the dead girl of the watch.
Dun dun dun.
I love that shit.
I know, right? Dude, some of those old radio shows, I mean, they're campy as hell, but they're fun. They're fun to listen to.
My favorite part of that last Fallout game was being the silver something.
The silver streak? The silver...
Silver mask? Something like that. Something,
yeah.
And then you could answer stuff in your radio voice and things like that. That was
great. I did love that, dude. That was so good.
Yeah, that was badass. We got to turn our stuff in pretty soon. We've started reading for our other podcasts. If you are not in the know, is the Bring Your Own Book Club podcast, where we read a book every month and review it and talk about it. You're welcome to, we announce that, and you're welcome to and encouraged to get the book in some manner, buy it digitally, physically, get it from your local library, like a conscientious person, and read along with us and listen to the show. If you are a $2 subscriber, you get the show. We want to hear about all aspects about this podcast, about our reading podcast, but we're working on, what are we doing? We're doing a Western, The Sisters Brothers.
And so far I'm digging the characters.
I think I'm on page 90.
Yeah. I've been listening to it, so I'm not sure what page I'm on.
Oh, okay. I wonder what that's like on audio. How is that on audio? Who's reading it?
I'm not sure who's reading it. He kind of sounds like, kind of a really stiff Alfred, but, he does a good enough job. I'll look it up and I'll look it up for you and find out.
I'm at the part where he just got his new horse. Are you that far?
I am a little bit past that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's kind of the book's kind of a slow burn, but I think the characters are super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and the dialogue between the two of them so far is it captures me. The dynamic between the two main characters so far. I'm liking their whole situation and kind of how they interact with one another.
Yeah, I like the dialogue. Yeah, I like good dialogue though.
Me too.
I mean, everybody likes dialogue. I especially like good dialogue.
Yes.
I think dialogue is a way of showing characterization.
Oh, very much so. There's so many uses for dialogue, but characterization is a big one.
For $2, you get to listen to us talk about that more at the end of the month. And for $25, you get to join us in a Discord discussion about the book. And you don't even need to worry about getting the book, because we will send you the book for free. Just to clarify, free book. All right, you got any comments before we go?
I was just going to say, who doesn't like a free book? I mean, sure, you're paying $25 for the experience, for the discussion part that you get to join in on, but you get the book for free. Who's not going to like that?
And you get to choose the books.
Did you ever watch the baseball card guy on late night Home Shopping Network?
No.
Oh, God, he was great. I almost had like a baseball card guy moment where I just wanted to, I've never seen it this cheap, folks. This is a great opportunity. Buy five, sell three, keep two. You know, it was
great.
Guy was amazing. I mean, maybe like one in like 20 people might hear that and go, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. But you never know. Mostly insomniacs.
Probably should have mentioned that you can find us on patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project. And that is where you sign up for the free book, to be part of the discussion, to be part of the book choosing process. And that includes all whatever the tier bonuses prior to that $25 level are too. I'm not used to whoring myself out. I need more practice.
Me too.
I've whored myself for women and booze before, but
not for the interwebs.
Not for the interwebs. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Steve, always for showing up and giving me your input.
Thank you as well.
All right. So everybody, I bid you good night or good day, depending on when you're listening to this, and we'll hope to hear from you. Join us next time, please.
Yes, please. Join us, won't you?
I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be a sexy join us or the, the Rocky Horror Picture Show join us. Yes, please. Won't you join us?
I'll just stick with the ambiguity.
Ambiguity keeps them thinking.
Indeed.
All right. We're out. Remember to write on.